Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. We wanted to talk about the raid that happened last week on Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's lawyer, because it's sort of slowly dawning on us all of the ramifications that this has. And yesterday, Cohen and his lawyer had a day in court, and I don't know, there were a couple of surprises.
to say the least. They were basically in there begging the judge to be like, don't let the prosecutors look at whatever they took.
Yeah.
Right.
Can you promise us that, judge?
Yeah.
And the judge was like, no. Fuck out of here. No. What the fuck are you talking about? No. Yeah. I mean, but we maybe I'll entertain the idea of like a special master or something, I think is what she said, which was like a third party to look. So that the prosecutors wouldn't see either or whatever, whatever. Yeah, and there was also talks of taint teams about what communications are tainted or whatnot. Unfortunately, it's not about the perennial area. Is that what you call it? The perineum?
Yeah.
The taint itself, which perennial perennial flowers. Look, I don't know. So here's the deal. I'm not a biologist. But what I am is someone who wildly speculates on a podcast about what things mean in court. So... Well, one of the things was over the weekend, you know, the judge was like, you need to disclose who your clients are so we even have an idea what's going on. So before they filed, he did disclose that Donald Trump and Elliot Broidy, who was the RNC fundraiser, who also had a Playboy mistress
that broke
thing.
Last week.
That broke last week.
He paid a
and there's
Playboy
another,
mistress $1.something million. Dollars.
And then there's another Playboy bunny who's also saying she was involved with Trump
just
back in the day.
Playboy is involved is so 80s.
Right.
I know.
Can't believe how 80s
this
all is.
Trump is the most 80s.
1985.
It feels great to know that Jamie Loftus and I were both employed by Playboy at one point.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, so... Yes, he had to disclose those two, and then they said, well, we're not going to say who the third one is. And then,
because
so
it would be embarrassing.
Embarrassing. Yes. And then the judge was like, that is not a valid legal excuse. Embarrassment is not a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So the judge says, who is it? Or like, why would it be embarrassing? And now here's where the lawyer could have written down on a piece of paper, slid it to the judge, and been like, there, do you see? And
DCY.
The judge could have been like, okay, let me take this under advisement and we'll like make a decision on it. Instead, the guy was like, no, but he'll be embarrassed because it's Sean Hannity.
Yeah.
Out loud. And there was apparently an audible gasp in the courtroom. Everyone was like, holy shit.
Should have written it down, man.
Whereas like other attorneys who were being pundits were like, usually you would write that shit down and that would at least give you a chance of it not coming out.
Discretion, yeah.
Right. So anyway, it comes out as Sean Hannity, and again, the world was abuzz.
Yeah. Right.
So now, let's think about when that news broke.
Yeah.
Let's see how Fox News covered this this bombshell that one of their own, it might be caught up in like, all of this
legally
shit.
Tied to all of the all crazy of shit that they've been like being like, no, nothing to see here for a long time.
Yeah. So this is what happens when, this is I think the actual moment where they're breaking it on Fox News.
Jesus.
In today's proceedings that are underway right now, Stephen Ryan, one of Cohen's attorneys, was asked by the judge to specifically name the other name because they said it would not fall under attorney-client privilege to withhold that name. And he stood up and named him as Sean Hannity. So moving on. Back and forth filings over this issue since last night. Both Cohen.
I mean, yeah, just steamroll past that.
Let's just gloss right over that.
And was I like how she goes, doesn't even go, and it was Sean Hannity, was named as Sean Hannity. Moving on.
Right. Not saying that's our Sean Hannity, just a Sean Hannity.
Named as Sean Hannity.
Like, that's how a cartoon would write that.
Yes, exactly.
Like, immediately after saying, moving on.
Moving on. Our aunt's giving you cancer.
Like, exactly.
We fear, yes.
Yes. Now, gosh, it just gives you so many ideas. Like, what does this mean? Does Sean kill someone?
Yeah.
Was he trying to figure out what he can legally lie about when he spreads lies about the DNC?
Yes, exactly.
And the DNC and WikiLeaks and people getting murdered over leaked emails and bullshit conspiracies? Or did he have a love child with Cardi B? We don't know. I mean, getting involved with Michael Cohen could mean so many things.
Yeah.
But again, Sean Hannity was very quick to distance himself because he knows how his reputation stinks.
Oh, God.
So I think on Anderson Cooper, young Coop comes through, flames old Sean by like, just listen
so
to
this. So we hear Hannity describing their relationship on his radio show, and then we hear Anderson Cooper's summary of that explanation.
I've known Michael a long, long time.
This is Hannity.
And let me be very clear to the media.
Mm-hmm.
Michael never represented me in any matter.
Uh-huh.
I never retained him in the traditional sense as retaining a lawyer. I never received an invoice from Michael. I never paid legal fees to Michael.
Right.
But I have occasionally had brief discussions with him about legal questions about which I wanted his input and perspective.
Yeah, just at the bar.
And I assume that those conversations were attorney-client confidential.
So he seems to be saying, I was not really a client of attorney Michael Cohen's, but our conversations are confidential because he is an attorney and I am his client.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
That's so good.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, you can't have it always, Sean. Yeah. You can't have it always.
It's crazy when that skewed logic well starts to run dry for you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Occam's razor thing is like, which Playboy model did he impregnate? I mean, like, that's like the Occam's razor, like what he's trying to do, whatever.
It seems to be Cohen's specialty.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's just so bizarre. Because, I mean, if it really was about just brief advice, you'd imagine Sean Hannity actually has access to much better legal opinions
than sleazy-ass Michael Cohen.
And someone who currently has the actual title of worst fucking lawyer in America.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, so it's weird. And another thing is clearly, like, there has to be something there, right? If the whole point was them trying to be like, he's an attorney and you probably have things that affect my client or having to deal with my client.
Yes.
Not just, yo, I used to just, you know, I don't know. We'd just shoot the shit, smoke some cigars, and he would be like, hey, man, can I lie about this person getting murdered because of the WikiLeaks and shit like that? Or like, hey, Julian Assange told me to say this. Can you tell this to Trump? Is he being a middleman between, like, you know, there's so many
vagaries.
Questions that we do not know. But what's
great, know yet.
Michael Cohen's lawyer standing up, and I'm just you describing the moment, Jack, and like there were gasps in the courtroom, and it was like this dramatic reveal of the third name. It's just like one of the other horrible like consequences of this Trump horseshit is just like everyone does feel compelled to sort of get their 15 minutes, or more accurately, 15 seconds, like in the public spotlight. Even this lawyer, like Michael Cohen's lawyer, was like, I could write it down and be discreet about it, but you know what? Let me take stage and like I'll be the story.
Dramatic.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are some people who have speculated that this could be just a big dog and pony show to be like, oh, get Hannity's name out there. But
and we'll forget that the president is the actual focus of the investigation.
But either way, like based on how he was making excuses, I doubt that. Another person, I forget who it was on NBC, was saying that technically if Michael Cohen did write down a memoranda or something based on a conversation he had, that he could be a client technically, and Sean Hannity might not be aware of that.
Yes.
But this thing just smells like a whole pile of horseshit.
Yeah. Sean Hannity is, I mean, like, I loathe him, obviously. He's so loathsome. But in, like, in another light, like, in my more, like, compassionate, if I really, like, exercise all my compassion, he is, like, truly, like, Arthur Miller tragic. There's something so deeply tragic about Sean Hannity. Like, he has sacrificed his whole... all of his credit, his personal credibility, his moral compass in the last year and a half or 2 years for Donald Trump. And the only thing he has to show for it is also going to prison, probably. Right. And it's like, it's sad. It's deeply tragic.
Yeah.
But like, I have no, I shed no tears.
Like
for him,
this film comes out, it's going to be like him barking at his desk, someone playing Sean Hannity, and it's going to be a hard cut to him in prison with his cellie just holding him from behind.
Exactly.
Right. Go to sleep, Sean.
So sad.
I don't know.
So sad.
There's going to be such a good like mini series on FX. In 25 years,
yes, exactly.
Like the People versus O.J. Simpson.
Exactly.
We should just start writing this now.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck exactly. So I think he made reference to attorney-client privilege.
Yeah. Or I don't know. He said it a weird way. What do you call it? Like attorney-client
confidentiality.
Confidentiality.
All right.
So we had mentioned last week that Michael Cohen has sort of a Saul Goodman vibe. And
right. Yeah, he does.
So Hannity actually told listeners Monday afternoon. I might have handed him, Cohen, $10. I definitely want your attorney-client privilege on this. Something like that. So that is actually directly from Breaking Bad.
Right.
This is a
That's
misconception
right.
started by Breaking Bad, where Saul Goodman is like, put a dollar in my pocket. That way I'm your attorney,
That's
you're
right.
my client. That is a scene from Breaking Bad.
Holy shit.
And they... like, they literally are just like, okay, so basically, I'm Walter White, you're Saul Goodman, let's play act this thing, except we're talking about real crimes we did.
Yeah. It's funny to aspire to the crime. It's just like, we should do it like they do on Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
so the way to actually establish attorney-client privilege is to, you know, publicly or, you know, say to the police, he is my attorney. Mm-hmm. I am his client. Therefore, ergo, it's not putting a dollar in somebody's pocket. It's just establishing that.
That is our relationship.
Right. Yes. And Hannity has kind of torpedoed his ability to do that by now coming out and being like, we're not really attorney clients. Like, he was never, and just basically laying out all the way somebody can be somebody's attorney and client and saying that wasn't the nature of their relationship.
Yes.
But let's listen to how an actual legal expert would tell Sean.
Well, right. So yesterday on Hannity, he got his favorite legal experts on, one of them being Alan Dershowitz, who up to this point has okayed every single bizarre idea and theory that Sean Hannity has had about the law, was willing to play devil's advocate for everything. Even Alan Dershowitz, like we said, had a moment where he was like, bro, you know, last week when the FBI raided Michael Cohen's office, you were out here being like, hey, man, he's an innocent man. This is total bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And you didn't say that you were.
Maybe should have mentioned it. Maybe should have mentioned it. Yeah.
Right. So this is Alan Dershowitz even being like, bro, I can only be crazy to a point.
Yeah. Right.
Well, first of all, Sean, I do want to say that I really think that you should have disclosed your relationship with Cohen when you talked about him on this show. You could have said just that you had asked him for advice or whatever, but I think it would have been much, much better had you disclosed that relationship. You were in a difficult situation,
obviously.
If you
understand the nature of it, Professor, I'm going to deal with this later in the show.
I understand.
It was minimal. I put out a statement about it.
You should have said that, and that would have been fair to say that it was minimal.
That's
fine. Look, you were in a tough position because, A, you had to talk about Cohen, and, B, you didn't want the fact that you had spoken to him to be revealed. And you had the right, by the way, not to have your identity revealed.
I have the right to privacy.
Right.
I do.
But, you know, it's a complex situation when you're speaking to millions of people.
Professor, it was such a minor relationship in terms of, and it had to do with real estate and nothing political.
I understand that.
Right. At the same time, if it was so minor, why didn't you want that? Why didn't you want that out there?
You don't even get it, Dad.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
It was so small. Like, it's not like what, sure, on paper, I should have done that, but you don't know,
it's just
Dad.
Just a real estate thing. I was like, what's the best real estate property to bury a body? It's just a little real estate, not a big deal.
Yeah, and I love how Dershowitz is still even just being like, I know, I know.
Yeah.
I
Yeah, you should have said it.
You still should have said it.
Exactly.
I know.
I like that. Dershowitz not backing down on that point.
And poor Michael Cohen, you just imagine Michael Cohen watching this and be like, Sean, like, I thought we had something. Like, we're just friends. Like, you imagine him just like a scorned lover. Like, I thought we were.
What was that?
I thought we were attorney client. Like,
dude, we had those. We bought those matching Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, again, this is another thing where I think we talk about on the show, like, this is like a cultural myth, I think, that people have been sort of taking in from film and TV about even like these mob films.
Yes.
That the lawyer somehow holds all the secrets, is impenetrable, and is above the law in some way. Like, he's like Melvoin in The Sopranos.
That's right. Robert Duvall in The God of the Consigliere. Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Michael Cohen specifically refers to himself as Consigliere.
Exactly. Yeah.
So,
but exactly. Like, these people.
What's a myth
are
that you know to be true? Or
mob
what is
lawyers
it?
Work.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right. Exactly.
But this is what happens when you elect an actual. I mean, that's the thing about this. He is a crime boss. Like, Comey telling Stephanopoulos, he's like, kind of treated like the dinners with Trump were like very mafioso-y. And like, you pledge your loyalty to the ring, you kiss the ring. Right. And, like, that one weird moment where Trump on TV made a gesture of walking over to Comey and hugging him. Like, all these weird mafia tactics of intimidation.
He's like, you're a made guy now.
Exactly.
I know it was you, James.
Yeah. And, like, you know that Trump is so dumb and television addled. Like, his ideas of status and power probably literally are from The Godfather.
Yeah.
Right. Literally. For sure. I mean, those are his points of status reference. So we're just seeing this, like, sad, pathetic TV addled brain.
And again, Roy Cohn, one of his first lawyers, is the notorious mob lawyer and McCarthy lawyer. So, like,
it goes back to that great tweet that this is not a government-run media. This is a media-run government.
Precisely right. It's just precisely right.
All bullshit media myths. And, you know, even the attack on Syria happens when some devastating footage shows up on Fox News.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ooh, spooky.
So there's actually this New Yorker article that just kind of puts all of this in perspective from Adam Davidson, the less important Adam. Where he talks about, he puts this in the context, the article, by the way, is salaciously called something like the end stages of the Trump presidency, which
sounds like a little bit like liberal fantasy.
Right.
But,
exactly.
Hey, but, we got to get those clicks.
So his point, and it's sort of an impressionist piece of journalism in the sense that he's writing it from his perspective as a journalist who has lived through two other things.
Yep.
That this experience reminds him of. He was on the ground in Baghdad when Bush was standing in front of that giant mission accomplished banner, which I was noticing earlier today in the office. It's like the ugliest banner. It's like
just
designed
from an aesthetic
in MS
point of view.
Paint. It's so weird. Like, it's like such a shitty pixelated flag in the background.
Oh, no.
But the size of it, like, it has to be the size of the Hollywood sign. Oh, so, like, God. They just, like, did it on a Word doc and then were like, here, print this up. And
just stretch it the fuck out however big you need it to be.
Yeah. Anyways, Adam Davidson
This thing isn't rasterized.
Right. Exactly. It wasn't rasterized.
Can you give me a fucking vector image? What the fuck, bro?
Davidson was on the ground in Baghdad when that was happening, and he was talking to people. So he knew ahead of the rest of the country and the public that that was bullshit. This thing was way worse than anybody thought it was.
Right.
He was also reporting on the financial crisis when that was slowly unfolding.
Yes.
And he, you know, even puts it, he was trying to get it through his thick skull that this was actually going in a really bad direction.
Catastrophic. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, he said that he finally realized it and, like, what those loans actually were, what those financial products were, and that they were about to explode and everybody, and that the global economy was going to be fucked for a little while.
Right.
And he said that at that time, you turned on the TV on MSNBC or CNBC, and people were like, okay, well, the worst of it's behind us,
right,
guys.
Exactly.
And this is like, we're headed in the right direction. So he's saying that's a thing where the preponderance of evidence he had access to told him things are way worse than people realize, and this is just the early stages, and we're about to find out how bad things are.
Yes.
It's just going to slowly come out. And he's saying that now that Cohen's offices have been raided, he knows that that is the future of the Trump presidency.
Right.
Like before, when it was just Mueller looking into whether there was Russian collusion, he was like, it could have gone either way because he's like, collusion doesn't really make sense for Trump because it involves a lot of foresight and like patience.
Yes. And like diabolical planning that he is not capable of. He's not mentally fit to execute.
So he was like, you know, it could really go either way. But the one thing he does know, based on a lot of reporting and everybody he works with at The New Yorker doing loads of reporting on the Trump Organization, is that they are a criminal organization that has been doing crime in New York
40
for
years.
Yeah. Right. For years.
Yes.
There's, you know, he talks about this Soho Trump project where Ivanka and Don Jr. are essentially on email saying, man, I hope nobody finds out about these crimes that we're doing. Like literally,
like literally?
On email. Yes. Yeah. He basically thinks Ivanka has a very high chance of getting arrested. Don Jr. has a high chance of getting arrested. Like there is just loads and loads of white collar crime happening.
That both does and doesn't have to do with Russian collusion. You know what I mean? It's like that Russian collusion has been the narrative right now. Like, oh, this is the thing that's going to sink Trump. And I think this is what really resonated with me about the article was just his thing of like the way that narratives change. And like I was in the like the Iraq narrative was like, we did it. Mission accomplished. It's over.
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm there and like it's far from over. Like that's a weird narrative to be under, to be like taken as.
They're like, are you actually here?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And like, so I get what he's saying about this Trump thing. It's like, okay, this Michael Cohen being raided, everything, the truth will hopefully come out. We will learn about the 40 years of gangsterization of the way he runs his real estate business, just like crimes and sex crimes and illegitimate children everywhere. And that will become the dominant narrative. And his presidency will fit into this larger narrative of 40 years of a crooked life that he's living. The thing that bums me out is that, and sorry if this sounds arrogant, but didn't we all know that before? I mean, like,
all the reports that he's referencing have been out there.
There are like 900 documentaries about
this. I am unaware of anybody who has taken a serious look at Trump's business who doesn't believe that there is a high likelihood of rampant criminality.
Exactly.
And then he goes on to list like five really clear-cut things. In Azerbaijan, he did business with a likely money launderer for Iran's Revolutionary Guard.
Yeah.
That, like, there's five other things, and he's like, those are just the really obvious ones.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, they are really in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Donald and Ivanka were investigated for financial crimes associated with Trump Hotel in Soho, and then there's an older article where, there's just all these emails where they're basically... there was no doubt that the Trump children approved, knew of, agreed to, and intentionally inflated the numbers of the building to make more sales.
To me, it was almost the dumb fucking reality show, The Apprentice, that changed the narrative. It's like, I feel like from the 80s up until The Apprentice, the dominant narrative about Trump was that he was America's favorite crook. That was the whole, that was his whole thing.
Well, he was like a fake-ass businessman.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was a fake-ass, crooked businessman. And that was like, we put up with him because he has hair and like, he's a little funny, so we put up with him.
Right.
Yeah. And then like, The Apprentice came along and I think maybe people, maybe in the flyover states, not to be condescending, but people maybe were like, oh, he's a legitimate mogul. Like, that man really knows he's the King Midas. Everything he touches turns to gold.
That's not a set decorator creating this mystique around him for a visual effect. That's,
I thought him as a crooked person was always the narrative, but I guess this article sort of highlights how, to me, one of my takeaways was like how easily narratives can just flip and sort of, all this preponderance of evidence can just be sort of shuffled aside, and now it's he's the president with collusion.
TV
and now
it is insanely
TV's
powerful.
Insane, man.
Yeah.
Insanely
powerful. It has all these people, even lawyers, thinking attorney-client privilege exists, but it fucking doesn't.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. So basically his summary is that the narrative that will become widely understood is that Donald Trump did not sit atop a global empire. He had a small, sad global operation, mostly run by his two oldest children and Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
And
very King Lear.
It was not a company that built value over decades.
Right.
It burned through whatever goodwill and brand value it established as quickly as possible. It basically, after he like bankrupted his fifth casino, people were like, we're not giving you money anymore.
That's
man.
Right.
And so he had to get all his money from foreign money launderers.
Russia.
And he's been doing business with foreign money launderers, and like he put it in this Crooked Media interview I heard, he was like, he's not even going with like the first moguls that people would do business with, that corrupt people would do business with. It's like the third
B&C
tier
third
tier moguls in the countries that like you would go to fifth.
Yes.
Like Azerbaijan is not the first place you would go to.
And even there, you're dealing with the tertiary scumbags.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Whee!
Yeah. Like I guess that is the point though. Like it's all about context. Like the collusion thing, I guess his point, which I hope and pray and believe is true, is that like the Russian collusion thing will in a year, when now that we know know everything and Cohen's been raided. We see all the documents. The Russian collusion, fixing, swinging the election, Putin hacking Facebook will fit into just a much larger context of Trump being a bankrupt asshole, a scumbag real estate guy who had to go to Russia and the Ukraine and all these other shady B and C level moguls for money. And that the collusion thing will fit into that narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
And even if it's not active collusion on his part, like just the idea that he is compromised, that they have something on him.
Yeah, I think above and beyond anything that Robert Mueller could dig up, P-tape or not, I mean, like, that's what's the most frightening thing. Because on Sunday, you had Nikki Haley saying, oh, we're going to sanction Russia. Go get ready.
Yes.
Steve Mnuchin will be unleashing the sanctions.
Yes.
And then cut to yesterday, threw her ass under the bus. We'll be thinking about
How about that, like, man?
Yeah, we can't. And that happened last week. We did put like harsher sanctions on Russia after the assassination a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Than the UK and
attempt
France. Yeah. And he was furious. He was like, "What the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, those are the homies."
So this guy, I mean, he's not even consistent with where he's at with. I mean, we all know this. Anyway, it's only Tuesday. Let's see what the fuck. I'm telling you, by Friday, what the fuck are we gonna be talking about?
Seriously, yeah.
I don't know. And I probably believe Sean Hannity. He might have a tape with Cardi B or something. I don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Yes,
you're really shipping Cardi B and Sean
Hannity. Hannity. Yeah,
very, very interesting.
I love it.
Your taste in celebrity couples. Very interesting. Yeah. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
And we're back. We also wanted to talk about a story that is about Starbucks. It's about Philadelphia, which, as we said, had been on a roll.
Yeah.
Two black men were arrested for sitting in a Starbucks.
Yeah, because black, because America. I guess these two men were waiting to meet up with a friend who showed up while they were being arrested. But someone who worked at Starbucks was like getting real nervous because of their implicit bias and thought, you know, oh, these people haven't bought anything. They're up to something, called the police, and the cops hauled them off. And all the while, this woman was recording it, and that video went viral. I'm sure most people have seen it. And The Root actually interviewed this woman who made the video, who was white, and she was saying that her friends afterwards were like calling her and being like, what really happened? Or like, there must have been something else. Something else must have happened. Like, it's hard for me to believe that two men of color were just arrested simply for sitting and someone thought they were suspicious. And it speaks, I think this incident kind of speaks to something a little bit bigger, is that there's still this idea that I think people think that people of color exaggerate when they describe the discrimination they experience, because I'm sure for some people, based on their life experience, it would be very hard for them to imagine some like, I was just waiting for a friend at Starbucks and I was arrested. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But guess what? Because especially black men in this country are looked as people who will probably take your life. That's the default position of police who take the lives of black men, is like, I feared for my life.
Right.
Meanwhile, think about how many of these mass shooters who are white somehow get taken into custody without getting shot. This is 2018 and this is kind of still the same shit. And, you know, I would take an opportunity for people, if you want to be an ally to people of color, if you even hear people think that people of color are suspicious for any reason, you have to really unpack why it is you have this sort of idea in your head. Is it because you really believe that? Is it because you've been conditioned to believe that? And I'm sure there are many people who say, well, I would never do that. But there are also many white people who have friends who are not white, who are fine with people of color if they know them. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I have black friends, but it's the black people they don't know who are suddenly suspicious to them or whatever. And I think this is just, again, this is something that people need to really evaluate. And, you know, I think the response to this has shown that some people still really struggle believing that this kind of discrimination happens and that it's real. And yes, you simply can get fucking harassed or discriminated because someone just thinks you're dangerous.
It really does seem like the absolute least you can do is to start challenging. Like, when someone in your life says something like casual and careless, like, I mean, for me, it makes trips home very stressful. But it's like, you know, we're at a point now where you have to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Because there are so many real world implications of casual shit like that, where it's like, you know, if you hear someone talk about people of color in a way that is super dismissive and like, oh, you know, they're sensationalizing stuff. Or if you hear people talking about like women, like I when shit was hitting the fan and people, you know, give a fuck for the first time in however long. You know, it's like I had to talk to my dad about it because he's like, oh, man, this is pretty crazy, right? And it's like, dude, what?
No, hold on, Dad. No, hold on.
Please stop. Yep. So it's hard. Like, I don't know. I don't like talking to anybody. And
period.
And I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. No one wants to talk to anybody. People are a nightmare. But if it is truly the least you can do is to point out that someone is being dismissive of a very real thing.
Yeah, because if you go along just being like, or not saying anything, then you allow this person to operate in this fake reality.
You are complicit, bitch.
But Starbucks, at the very least, they're saying, oh, we're going to have something about like invisible bias or, I don't know, some kind of weird training. I mean, like,
Like, we're bringing back Oprah Chai. Jesus fucking Christ.
We're going to put something about equality on our cups.
Oh, yeah. Remember when they were like, let's start conversations about race.
Yeah,
remember that whole fucking thing
CEO.
They did?
Yeah.
I like when Burger King is like, we're queer now. Like, they're just so like,
Did that really happen?
They had like queer cups for a while. They had like rainbow cups. Burger King's like, actually, we the Burger Kings are queer now. And it's like, this
we
is
the Burger
misguided.
Kings.
Yeah. I mean, if they really believe about having it your way, you've got to be all inclusive, baby.
Right. You know can't be. That was one of my favorite.
We the Burger Kings have always been about having it your way. Right. And today,
we realize that philosophy extends further than just a hamburger.
An image that went viral yesterday. Stormy Daniels released the police sketch of the man who threatened her, which I think that was when she told her story about the guy coming up and threatening her on 60 Minutes. She told that story. I think everybody was like, oh, well, tell us who that person was, or like, look through all the pictures in America. Let's find this motherfucker.
Pictures in America.
Yeah, let's look through everybody, find them. But so she did a police sketch with somebody who, you know, police sketches are generally not super well trusted, and scientifically they're not great, and sometimes they make your memory of somebody's face less accurate because you're having to like match, you're having to go back and forth between your memory of the thing and then what the drawing looks like, and it sometimes gets blended. Other times, super producer Anna Hosnier was saying that she thinks that sometimes people end up describing someone who is, you know, familiar to them and not necessarily the stranger who they're trying to describe, which is interesting because, so this picture came out, people were saying young Willem Dafoe,
right,
Tom Brady, Starship Troopers star Casper Van Dien.
Oh, love him.
And the puppet from Team America all blended together. And it really does look like a blend of all those things. And then this morning, TMZ posted an article pointing out that it's actually just her husband. The drawing is her husband. It looks almost identical to like her third husband.
It's strange. Crazy how much it looks like her husband. Like, yeah. I mean, they may have a point.
Also, what a bummer. That guy sucks.
Yeah. His eyebrows are a mess.
Oh, his face is so aggressively trying to be handsome.
Yeah.
Right.
He looks like a MMA Barbie. Or like a like if there was a MMA toy, that's what he would be. Anyway, so yeah, this guy, Brendan Miller. I guess that's her husband.
Yeah.
Just like him.
Very strange.
Maybe it was him, though.
Yeah. To be fair to sketch artists, and this one in particular, this one seemed like there. Somebody released some of the drawings this person has done before based on, you know, descriptions, and they're like spot on. So yeah. This is apparently the best sketch artist in America.
The Guinness World Record holder for being the most successful sketch artist.
Right. Which, yeah, that's so great. They found the right person to do the job. It just seems weird that they look so much like.
And we'll see if this, you know, ends up leading to the arrest of the person who threatened Stormy Daniels, because she's saying, you know, I got $131,000 for the person who can identify this person, which is funny because $130,000 is what Michael Cohen offered her to STFU. So, you know, she's, you know, kind of taking a shot at him.
Why would she add a whole 999,000 more than, or 100 more? Whoa. Dollars.
Math class.
Whoa.
1,000. Take a seat, art school.
In all fairness, I barely went to math class. Yeah. The mornings were short.
I was rehearsing for Cats.
Oh,
but that brings up Michael Cohen, because yesterday I was reading this thing about how even shadier this dude looks, like when you really sort of look at his neighborhood, where he's from, his family. So everyone knows he's friends with Felix Sater, who's like a lot of people are saying like he might be his connection to Russia or whatever, because that guy, Felix Sater, his dad was like a capo in an organized crime syndicate that was considered to be one of Russia's largest. And then we find out that his uncle owned a Brooklyn social club, which was a well-known meeting spot for members of both the Italian and Russian mafias. So in like the 70s and 80s. And then they're saying up until the 90s, it was considered some people in law enforcement were considering it the sort of headquarters where the Russian mafia literally ran their entire crime organization out of. And that's like a place that Michael Cohen's family owns.
It's like he owned Bada Bing, essentially.
Basically, it's called the El Caribe. and so it's just interesting to look at, I guess, the more, you know, I think we're starting to see this pattern. I think we were talking about it yesterday about how this is just sort of like just the doofiest white people mafia ever, of like just really inept criminals. And now we're seeing like that's the world Michael Cohen also grew up in, like where his uncle owned a mob hangout. So, of course, he's probably going to have that mindset a little bit.
I mean, if you hear him talk once, it almost like. Just the mafia is just pouring off of him. Like, you just feel like, okay, this guy's out of central casting for Mafiosa.
Right.
And, so it's not overly surprising. And also the fact that he, like, threatens to do physical harm to people on a regular basis.
Yeah. I don't think that's part of your law school training.
Right.
I don't know. It feels like it might be.
Right. Yeah.
Like one of those night class electives.
Right. But I guess, like, I don't know if you're screaming that you'll fuck someone's soul over the phone is, like, I don't know what.
I don't know. That really feels like something they'd teach at, like, Harvard Law.
Well, he did not go there. I think he went to the clown school of law.
Right.
or whatever the fuck the place
what
is.
What I do to you is going to be disgusting.
Yeah.
But wasn't he like a big personal injury lawyer?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Basically he made an entire, he built himself on having like those commercials.
Yeah.
You in a car accident.
Right. Right. Thanks to Michael Cohen, I got $3 million.
We are having sort of an extended tax day today, which everybody wants to talk about. People love talking about taxes.
Yeah.
So the IRS website crashed yesterday, so they extended it for, I think, today? Just today?
Maybe today, or maybe another day. I don't know. They definitely had to extend it because they're like, hey, sorry, y'all crashed our website because who knows? Of course it crashed on tax day.
But doing your taxes, getting your taxes in is a big, serious deal in America. And Miles, you were pointing out that that's not really the case anywhere else.
Okay. Imagine everyone has done taxes in this room and they're confusing. And most of the time you have to consult a person at H&R Block, an accountant, or use TurboTax. And because the shit is so complicated. And the reason it's so complicated is because tax preparers lobby the government regularly to keep the tax code as confusing as fucking possible. So our only option is to go to these places. Okay?
There's an H&R Block lobby?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Fuck. Well,
big
this.
Tax.
So, there is such a thing as big tax now. So Intuit, who makes TurboTax, they spent $2 million in 2017. On shit like basically they do not want to simplify the tax code, like right. Outright, like that's in lobbying documents that is what their stated purpose is for their lobbying efforts. So when you look at other countries like Denmark or Sweden or Spain or Japan, they already have systems in place where the government like sends you a prepared return. They estimate your taxes using information your employer and the bank already have because obviously they know everything, the tax collecting institutions of these countries. You know, in the UK, most people don't file returns. Like, the government will calculate your liability or your refund and send you a check or a bill unless you're self-employed. Now, in my other homeland, Japan, very simple system. Okay, so the Japanese version of the IRS, which is the Kokusaicho, they gather all the pertinent data for each worker, their income, taxable benefits, number of personal exemptions, tax withheld, and so on. And they compute how much a taxpayer owes down to the fucking last penny, the last yen. And they have precision withholding, so like they know exactly how to calculate everything. And they'll just send you a postcard just telling you, hey, this is what you made, this is your refund amount, or this is what we're actually gonna have to take out because you underpaid your taxes, and we can just take that out of your account. And yeah. Boom, you're done.
Just
that's
fucking
all.
Tell us how much we owe.
Just tell us. Yeah. Just fucking, why do I have to tell you?
Right.
Why am I paying somebody to tell me how much to pay you? The fuck is this?
In addition to the like turbo taxes of the world, I bet it has something to do with the fact that really, really rich people can pay like attorneys and, you know, accountants to find ways to get them to like not pay
of
taxes.
Of course, yeah, because the thing is so fucking complicated.
The more
convoluted,
complicated it is, yeah.
Yeah, then you need someone because also, let's be real, tax preparation services are like, they're in an existential crisis because algorithms and shit. Like, the need to go to a human at an H&R Block is becoming, like, that business is shrinking, which is why they had to get into, like, the TurboTax game of offering shit like H&R Block at Home, or I think is whatever their do-it-yourself website service is. So they're, like, up against it, so it behooves them to make shit as complicated as possible. Now, we are trying to change shit. Elizabeth Warren introduced a bill last year that would completely simplify the tax code and make it easier for people to just have Uncle Sam just send you the bill or be like, hey, brother, you're getting this refund.
Right.
And also, it'll cut down on so much eaten up productivity for human beings and save a lot of money in the long run if you do shit like this.
Oof.
But again, when you got people putting money at this thing to make it as complicated as possible, we have this same thing year after year after year. I feel like these stories come out all the time where we're just talking about, why can't our taxes be more simple? Here's why. And like the people who are arguing for keeping it as complicated are saying, well, we don't want to extend the reach of the government. You don't want them doing your taxes. Like, can you really trust the IRS to tell you what they're going to do? Well, all of these programs are voluntary. So even if the thing you got from the government you didn't agree with, you can opt out of it and do it yourself. Or you can be like, oh, okay, that looks cool.
Right.
Yeah, I'm with that. Again, it's just a headache because it's one of those things where most people in other countries are like, what? Y'all have to walk
you
into
do
a
what?
Box full of receipts and like right. Panic over what kind of food you can write off as an entertainment expense or whatever. It's just, it's crazy.
You can tell that it's a good idea to simplify the taxes because when the Republicans introduced their tax cuts, they claimed that they were making it so that you could just file your taxes on one side of a postcard.
Right.
So, like, when they're lying about having a good idea, even though they don't have it, you can tell that that's
right.
Probably worth looking into. Obviously, they're not going to do anything with it, but...
I love tax time.
Do you?
Isn't it the funnest?
Oh, it's my favorite.
Oh, because you get... are you do a lot of 1099 work,
well,
so you get to...
I take way less exemptions than I should, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of like a savings account, and I get a return every year.
Nice, yeah, yeah.
And then I buy something dumb.
Oh, what'd you buy this year?
A computer.
Oh, you idiot.
Yeah, dumb.
Fool.
You fool.
Durr. I do the pointing and clicking
yeah.
on it.
Oh, well, hope it's a nice computer.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, is it a nice computer?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's part of why it was dumb.
Oh.
It's like, you only do two things
yeah.
on this.
It's like, you don't need a full-on gaming doing? Tower.
Right. I needed the gaming tower.
Yeah, I need the graphics card. How am I going to watch 240p music video clips of New Kids on the Block?
It is 419.
Woo!
One less than 420, Hitler's birthday, the chillest day of all. It's all 420, National
day, dude.
Weed Day. I don't know.
All right,
what do you call it?
All right, Pappy. All right. We all know right. the narcs
I'll let
are.
You take it from here, Miles.
Take it from here. Yeah, well, bro, let's talk about 420. Really, I want to talk about drug policy. there was the International Journal of Drug Policy just released a little bit of a report on their sort of analysis of just sort of the different forms of like drug policy that is out there, especially in the United States. Like after many conferences, like the leading drug policy experts, they are kind of concluded or just, you know, they did some research with economists, criminologists, other people and be like, okay, let's look at the different forms of drug laws we have. So we'll talk specifically about weed since it's, you know, 419. In this country, it's, you know, absolute prohibition that we have here where it's just completely illegal from a federal standpoint and you just can't have it. No way. And then there's decriminalization, which sort of how it was in this state when there was medical marijuana, like when it was first introduced, where you could consume and possess it, but it wasn't considered a full on criminal offense. But the drug was still considered illegal. But now that we have recreational use laws, we're more in like the state control of the market, which is where the state can sort of regulate everything from the age limits to control of production and sales, where we're not quite there where the government is actually controlling the means of production. But they do have real regulations that make the market sort of safe for consumers where they have it tested to make sure you're not, you know, smoking crazy pesticides or have it in proper packaging to make a child safe and things like that. And then you have the unfettered free market where drugs are just treated no differently than any consumer good, like a fucking hat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can I ask a very dumb question about the state of legalization in California right
yeah.
now? Does it mean that I could go into a MedMen or a weed store and buy a marijuana cigarette and then walk down the street and smoke it in the world?
No, so you can't smoke it in public. You can consume it privately, mm-hmm. but you cannot consume it out in the open. So yes, you could go into a MedMen and buy your jazz cigarette and do your thing.
Like an edible, like is it? Like,
I mean, no one's gonna know.
No one's gonna
I mean,
know like, if the gummy bears are like magic gummy bears.
Yeah, unless you're like you're being so aggressive, where you're like, hey guys, I'm about to eat one of those weed candies.
Mm-hmm. I would be aggressive. Like when I go to Vegas and they allow you to drink in the street, I look at cops when I do it because I'm really enjoying the freedom. So if I did have weed gummy bears, I would. Scarf him down in front of a cop, being like,
with,
this
like,
doesn't look like
bag.
A crime, does it?
Yeah, just have, like, the big bag open. It's like, oh, yeah. what could these be? I don't know.
I would not suggest scarfing down edibles, by the way. Or maybe take one to a half.
No, here, like, let's do a little experiment later.
But what if I'm trying to be, like, nasty in front of a cop?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I hope it's worth that bit.
Right.
Yeah, nice. So, I mean, it's just interesting. I think for most people, we probably realize that the complete criminalization of marijuana was an absolutely absurd idea. But again, it's just good to know we're moving closer and closer to acceptance and kind of embracing it in a way that's creating tremendous tax revenues and can be put to good use, especially when you look at things like when you have states where teachers are literally about to, like, striking because they're not getting the proper pay and things like that. Wow, you could probably use a couple hundred million in tax revenue in a state like that to do some shit. So, you know, again, I'm probably preaching to the choir to some people who listen, but again, I think you check out this study that we'll post to in the footnotes, you know, just so you can learn yourself a little bit about how these forms of drug policy affect us in different ways and what might be best going forward.
So which one came out on top? Is there a country that, like, has the policy that we should be trying to...
I mean, they weren't looking at it so much as like a country we should adopt because, again, they're sort of looking at it through the lens of like the United States too and what that means for consumers in this country. But again, it seems like the most sort of from like the benefits and cost of it, like state control has like the highest social impact that's positive and the highest
health
impact. States'
rights is what you're arguing for.
States' rights,
as
bro.
As usual.
As usual, man. If you don't want to bake somebody a cake, you don't got to.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's your right, bro. You know how I get down. Yeah. No, and that's a joke in case somebody's listening for the first time. That's not my real stance.
All right. We're going to take a quick break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
And we're back. Just wanted to talk about Barbara Bush, who passed yesterday, who, you know, I guess just based on her appearance, I had always sort of associated her with a kind old lady. And I do remember in 2005, while visiting victims of Hurricane Katrina at the Astrodome, her saying some wildly problematic shit about how, like, because they're underprivileged anyway.
That's a quote.
This is working, quote, very well for them. Which the New York Times, by the way, described as her candor.
Wait,
sometimes
what?
Got her in trouble. That's not candor. That is just being a fucking classist, racist loon. But
that's not the point, right?
I do want to also focus on the fact that, yeah, she was also just kind of a hard-ass badass. Like, I assumed that her obituaries would not be the most interesting obituaries to read, and, like, she was actually crazy interesting. And, like, there are these quotes from her childhood friends who would say that they would come on the school bus in the morning And they say, quote, "It would be all planned. Nobody's going to talk to June this morning. You'd sit there on the bus with your friends and no one spoke to you. It was a dreadful feeling."
So Barbara was coming on the bus and being like, "You're not talking to her.
We're not talking to her. You're talking to me.
June is fucking excommunicated. Right. Fuck out of here."
So that's one of her friends.
She this was like real housewifing.
Right.
Right.
Before.
She was real housewife. Right.
In the 30s.
Just like world class, like legendary mean girl. And then another childhood friend is giving a hypothetical scenario, and she said she'd call ahead and say, "We're not going to speak to June this morning." So again, they can't.
June, man.
Poor June. You know?
Two different people?
Two different people wow. are talking about how she froze this girl June out when what she was like fuck? A child.
What did June do?
Yeah, and she would also like
June
make...
probably wore pink on a Wednesday.
Right,
right.
Which she wore, we don't do.
She wore white after Labor Day, yeah. So like, June can get the fuck out.
She would make fun of her friends for like stammering or, you know...
oh no, she was today!
Today, Junior! Yeah.
Damn, she's like the originator of all this cool shit.
Damn.
Original like, Housewife, really, original Billy Madison.
Right. In reading her obituary, you really get the sense that she was... sort of the brains and the balls behind the operation, like behind
right.
their couple like that. It's just interesting that, you know, there's also a quote in one of the obituaries where someone says, "People always said Nancy Reagan would kill you if you said bad stuff about her," says one staff aide who worked closely with the Bushes. "But I always thought Mrs. Bush was the one who would kill you," which I don't know.
This is her obituary.
I know. Well, I didn't know that about Nancy Reagan either. I just think it's interesting to like, we should take a look back at first ladies who were, you know, like this, who were just, you know, it was at a time when a lot of like brilliant and really tough women had to sort of sublimate themselves to their husbands' careers.
Right.
And like, I really feel like in a lot of cases, you'll find that it was basically the women like who were calling the shots. Like, because Reagan did not seem like a very tough person, but apparently Nancy was just like not fucking around.
But it's also that thing of like, the husband and the wife could have the same exact behavior.
Right.
And the woman's would be much more received as hostile, whereas
of course.
The man's would be received as like,
tough.
Boy, does he get it.
Right. Like, right.
You know, and so like I always wonder in scenarios where we are talking about it like that, how much of it was that? How much of it was just a woman saying things?
Right.
That I mean, she had full right to maybe say.
Yeah, no, I totally, like, I'm saying that I fucking respect this. Like, I think it's awesome because people have, like, genuine affection for her, but also seem to be terrified of her. Like,
I love it.
Yeah, and, like, when you look at, like, what their depictions are or descriptions of her childhood time, too, was even, like, yo, she basically told everybody she ran shit.
Yeah.
From Jump Street.
Right.
If it was the school bus, she fucking ran. Who even spoke to whom?
Right.
You know what I mean? And then taking shots at, who is it, Geraldine Ferraro? She referred to as, quote, that $4 million, I can't say it, but it rhymes with rich. And then everyone's like, whoa!
So she referred to this person as a $4 million
bitch.
Just yeah. like, that was her nickname for
but
them.
But then she knew the optics that she was like, the description of this write-up of her is like, she was mortified that she had let slip the mask that had concealed the mean streak that had first emerged in her childhood. She
right.
immediately apologized to Ferraro and kept her salty tongue in place for years afterward. So I don't know if the salty tongue thing is apt. Or,
do you remember when Jeb was about to run and or like was running and there was a soundbite of her going like, I don't know, there's got to be another family that should be doing this, right?
Right.
Like, she was essentially like, I don't, it can't just be two families that
right.
are just going to keep going
back
and
forth.
Forth.
Right.
Like
another,
and then
Bush?
She got in trouble. They were like, what
Mom.
Are you doing?
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I bet, yo, those Bush children, the sons of George H.W. Bush, were probably so shook of their mother.
Oh
like,
my
if
God.
That's her description, because
oh,
if
yeah.
you look at Jeb and G.W., they're like, well, like,
right.
as if their mom would be like, this is your finger painting?
Are
you a
serious?
Fucking dumb fuck?
That's weird. It looks like a fucking toe painting.
Yeah. Throw it in the trash,
you
Jeb.
Idiot.
What a fucking name, huh? I'm sorry, ladies. He's an idiot. And then like,
it was Jeff, but I want you to be embarrassed the rest of your
yeah.
life.
You're Jeb.
Is that short for Jebediah? Oh, apparently, according to super producer Anna Hosnier, Jeb is not short for Jebediah. It is an acronym for his full name, which is
John Ellis Bush Sr. Or because you know why? Because John was probably like Barbara's father, and she's like, he would be disappointed in you. You will be Jeb. Fuck out of here, John. Oh,
I can't even. I don't feel comfortable.
I can hear my father's urn rattling.
So, yeah.
I mean, look, you know, you were clearly the matriarch of a dynastic political family.
Right.
So, you know, shouts to you. You know, it's never nice. You never want to hear about anyone passing away.
Yeah.
But it seemed like she did it on her terms, too, because she, I think, refused to have any more life-saving procedures over the weekend, they reported. So,
yeah,
it seemed like.
And just real quick, right before I die, nobody talked to June.
Yeah, right.
No one fucking talked to June. June, I know you showed up. We are
June's
not talking
just
to
in
you.
The corner, like, aw.
Yeah. Like, she's like wiping her head with a washcloth. Yeah. And she's like, who let this bitch in here? June, call the police.
$2 bitch. Yeah.
Besides your feet on Wiki Feet, what is something you think is underrated?
Ooh, underrated, I would say, is making an exit. Because I don't know, I like to just disappear from social situations.
You like to make an entrance, but not an exit.
Right. I like to crash through the ceiling, but then leave quietly.
Right.
But last night I did a show at a Christian college.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I was doing a bunch of time before a Princess Diaries screening.
Was this in a theater?
It was in the mansion that the Princess Diaries takes place in.
Wait, for real?
Yeah, it's at Mount St. Mary's College. I didn't mention that earlier. Yeah, it was in the mansion that Julie Andrews lives in.
Oh, they shot at Mount St. Mary's College?
Yeah, they did.
Oh,
and so they were showing the Princess Diaries there. It was a big old Catholic sleepover. Little Jamie came in with her little jokes, and I was trying to leave. I was trying to get to my Uber after that show, and I couldn't figure out what the way out was, and so I ended up...
Like, isn't it, my time's over, thank you, transaction finished, I have to go home?
Oh, no, so I left the building, and then I couldn't figure out how to get out of the campus.
Okay.
Because I was like, oh, there's probably an exit over here, and that's where my Uber was waiting, and I was calling him, and he was just like, where are you? I was like, I can't figure out how to get out. And he was like, okay, well, figure it out. Uber pool, full. A brimming Uber pool.
Oh, you must have looked like the fucking asshole when you pulled up.
So what I did was I scaled a gate, which I've never done before. It wasn't a high gate, but it was a gate. So I was scaling the gate. Entire Uber pool is watching. And then as I'm climbing the gate swings open.
Oh,
my
God.
It was open. And I was right next to a gaping exit that was like 2 feet over.
So it was like...
I looked like... a gigantic moron, and then
did
had
anybody
to
get it on video?
No,
you were going to be famous.
No,
yeah. That is unbelievable.
It was. I mean, the frame for that video would have been clear exit,
right? And someone on a gate that is not even hinged closed,
swinging
like,
open with them on it.
That's one of my favorite videos, just in the history of the internet. Is that happening to a police officer as he's scaling a wall to go in on a raid?
Uh-huh.
And
oh
then
my God.
He like gets stuck on the fence, like
right.
with his like crotch at the top of the fence.
Right.
And then the door swings open and the rest of
you're
the
just,
cops
like,
just
it.
Walk right through.
Yeah, there's another one like that of like this like old, it's like from Russia or something. This like guy is trying to get through like this really awful hole in a chain link fence. And he just keeps getting caught. And I think he might be drunk or something because he got like a black bag. And then they pan over. There's an actual just cutout of the gate, and like these kids are walking. But it's like the best reveal of like, watch this guy struggle. Then pan. Oh,
right.
Look at that.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that was deeply humiliating. And then I was in that Uber pool for a half hour after that, and no one said anything.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news, with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.